good evening, and welcome to the Man Cave. This is your host, Aaron Ripmaster, and with me tonight, recording Diz Dad's podcast, episode number 69, are Scott Henney.
Hello, everybody.
And Jason Mitz.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Glad to have you on board, Jason. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Epcot Area Resort Dining, getting back to a favorite topic among dads, food. But before we do that, I do want to thank our podcast sponsor, Fairytale Journeys. Fairytale Journeys is an authorized Disney travel planner, and they'd love to help you plan your next Walt Disney World, Disneyland, or Disney Cruise Line vacation. Heck, they can even help you with Disneyland Paris. Check them out at fairytalejourneys.com, and maybe, you know, ask for a Diz Dad's travel agent. There are a number of us, and we'd love to help you enjoy the magic at Disney just like we do. Now, guys, tonight we're talking food again, and we're focusing on the Epcot Area Resorts. So we're talking here Beach Club, Yacht Club, Boardwalk, Swan and Dolphin, that whole area that's really just sort of right outside the International Gateway. Everybody ready to talk good eats?
I am absolutely ready to talk about food.
All right. So I'm just going to kind of throw this out and you know, get Jason a bit of a trial by fire here and let him be up first at his first podcast. So, Jason, why don't you give us one of your favorite Epcot Area Resort restaurants?
Well, thanks. I guess my number five is actually on Boardwalk itself, and that would be the bakery, the Boardwalk bakery on Boardwalk.
Okay.
And I really like them. Not so much for breakfast, and I guess I want to preface this by saying the Boardwalk Resort itself doesn't have, you know, like a food court, as it were, for most of the other resorts, like what they have. So if you want to get breakfast, typically you'll have to go down to the bakery, and they have a kind of a limited menu, but what they do have is really good. And maybe not so much at breakfast, but at lunch and supper, as far as like they have like a smoked turkey sandwich that's excellent and a ham and gouda that is really, really good for being sandwiches, you know. And that's what I start off with my number five.
All right. Sounds like a nice start. How about you, Scott? What's number five on your list?
Well, I think Jason's going to smoke me out of my top five, but my number five was also the Boardwalk Bakery. And
I will just, see, this is what I get for putting the brothers-in-law who travel together on the podcast together.
Yeah. Well, you know, my argument for the bakery is their breakfast stuff. They've got amazing croissants. They've got amazing snacks for any time of day. It's not just a meal place. You can go in there and get basically whatever you want, and it's all good food. So that's my input for the bakery, and I will jump into my next one, which is...
No. Wait a second. I get a turn.
Oh, okay. All right.
I get a turn. I got a number five on my list.
All right.
And for my number five, you know, on this menu... is really sort of a magic phrase that will automatically probably land you on just about any top five list I'm working up of restaurants, and that's the phrase beer sampler. Big River Grill and Brewing Works, you know, it's number five on my list. It doesn't make the top of the list because the food is okay, but I don't think it's anything extraordinary. But what sets it apart is that it serves an array of essentially microbrew beers that brew right there on site. And you can order them as a flight, as a beer sampler. And I love a flight of beers. I love being able to compare a range of tastes. You know, even if the last one, you know, you don't taste quite as much as the first one, I love the opportunity to compare them and try a little bit of everything. And I think it's a fairly easy ADR to get in that area, too.
And you pulled another one off my list.
When we're done, you'll have nothing left.
I know it. That was that was actually my number one.
Ooh, ouch. All right, well, argue with me here then, because it barely made my list. Why is it number one on yours?
Number one on my list, obviously, beer sampler. There's beer there. It's good beer. But the food I thought was top-notch. That and the service that we got there was amazing. the time that we ate there, there was a 2-hour wait. We didn't have reservations. There's a 2-hour wait to get in and get a table. But there was a storm moving in, and they basically told us, there's 2 hours to wait inside. We can seat you outside and serve you right away. But it's outside. There's rain coming, and it's at your own risk. Us being from Iowa, we don't, a little rain doesn't scare us. So we went ahead and sat down outside. Never ended up raining. We got served right away. It was great food, great beer, and a hell of a lightning show.
Very cool.
So that was the between the food and the service that they give us, you know, just saying, hey, if you guys want to sit outside, we'll serve you right now, and you can sit outside. That service is top-notch to me.
All right. All right. I can buy that. I see what you're, where you're coming from on there. All right. Well, so that was your number one. I guess I'll kind of turn the corner here with my number four. And number four on my list is a place that is sort of iconic for the boardwalk area, and that's Beaches and Cream. It's just your basic burger place in a lot of ways. But first of all, it makes my list on the strength of the desserts. You know, nice, big, healthy portion, made for sharing desserts. Don't know that the kitchen sink is necessarily my favorite, because at a certain point it all melts together and it's all one flavor, and that's not the best. But even you know, some of the other sundaes are huge, ready to share. Noe Jose, hot fudge, all those flavors in a classic environment, you got to love it. So number four on my list is Beaches and Cream. Scott, you have a number four left on your list?
Yes, my number four is the hot dog stand at the Boardwalk hot dog stand.
Okay, and why is it number four?
Great food for a hot dog stand. They sell what they call the jumbo hot dog. I don't think it's quite a foot long, but it's just awesome. They've got burgers, they've got hot dogs, they've got some fried sandwiches, and it's everything's good there. It's so, quick, easy. That's it.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, because this is the problem I run into a lot of times at Disney when it comes to especially to hot dogs. They seem to do a decent job with the hot dogs, but the hot dog buns tend to just be nasty. So are they using something different there, the hot dog buns? Because I just can't stomach the hot dog buns, for example, at Casey's. I just think they're tasteless. So what about the ones there at the hot dog stand at Boardwalk?
I personally like them. I mean, the bun is half of the hot dog when you look at it that way. It's, you know, you got to have the full flavor of the meat and the bun.
Sure.
And when I had it, not to get off topic, but Casey's has a lot of exotic hot dogs, and there's a lot of other stuff on those dogs that can drown out the bun. I've learned that from experience. The hot dogs from the Boardwalk stand are just that. They're just a hot dog. You put your own toppings on. You do what you want with it. Just like a hot dog stand at the Atlantic Boardwalk. To me, the bun is better than anything else I've had there, I guess, as far as hot dog buns go.
Sure.
But it's the whole experience of being on a boardwalk, getting the hot dog, putting your own toppings on it, doing what you want with it. It's just a good deal all the way around.
All right. How about you, Jason? What's number four on your list?
Well, number four, I might take a little bit of heat for this, but I went with Shula's over in the Dolphin Resort.
Okay.
And that is a very interesting place. It has been said to have some of the best steaks in Florida. I'm trying to stay positive here, but my hang-up with Swan and Dolphin is they are on Disney property, but they're not managed by Disney. And so they're more set up for convention people They're not really for the tourist, the Disney crowd, I don't feel. And that being said, you know, I'm also in the meat business. So okay. The price is, you know, geez, I wish I could get some of this on the fresh cuts that I have in my meat counter, you know, like a 16 ounce New York strip steak for $46. I think I have $8.99 a pound on those every day, you know? So, and it also kind of, it threw me with the business casual dress, attire that you need to eat there. You know, the food, great. But, the fact that it's a little bit of a, I don't know, it just didn't seem very receptive or friendly to the normal Disney crowd.
Fair enough.
But, you know, the food was great.
Yeah. And, you know, one tip about Shula's, Shula's is one of the restaurants at the Swan and Dolphin. There are a number of them that frequently show up on the restaurant.com gift certificates that are pretty heavily discounted. So if you watch it carefully at restaurant.com, sometimes you can pick up like, you know, I've even managed to land Shula's gift certificates, you know, $25 gift certificate for $2.50. And it's just a really good deal, you know. You're going to spend $100 if you take your family to dinner there eat really easily. So, you know, you might as well save 25 along the way.
Sure. Sure.
All right. Well, why don't you turn the corner for us this time and give us your number three?
Okay. Well, my number three, I went with the old standby, the ESPN Club there on Boardwalk. And, you know, it's a basic sports bar. Ironically, it's on steroids. The food's pretty average. You know, they have a really, you know, a decent menu, but the decor and ambiance is really what sets it apart. It does get crowded, and like I said, they have the decor in there from all kinds of sports memorabilia. They have every ESPN channel going there. I don't think there's a single sporting event that goes on that isn't covered, you know, on the wall there at some point. And sometimes they even have live broadcasts from there, especially during spring baseball. That's pretty cool. And I think the reason I like it so much and put it so high on my list is I watch ESPN a lot when I'm at home. And I'm not fortunate enough to have an annual pass or be close enough. You know, I live in the Midwest. I can't just, you know, catch a quick direct flight down there, hop in the car and be there within a couple of hours. So to go in there and kind of get that little taste of back what it's like at home, but then to finish your meal and then step right back out onto the boardwalk is kind of a nice little treat. You know, it's kind of like a little time warp there.
All right. All right. I can see that. How about you, Scott? What's number three on your list?
Number three on my list comes in as the Boardwalk Pizza Window.
You are all about that Boardwalk quick serve, aren't you?
I am. Just the last trip we stayed at the Boardwalk, and it was just so convenient to have so many options right there. The pizza is amazing there. We fed a family of 25 out of that pizza window, and I didn't hear a single person complain.
Yeah, it was, I mean, for being a simple pizza, I mean, it was good.
Yeah, they cut it with large pieces. They top it just right. They got the grease just right. And it's just flat out good pizza. It's quick to get into, quick to get food. They fill mugs. If you're on the dining plan and you got mugs, they fill mugs.
Good point.
So it's just a good, quick place to stop, grab a bite to eat, and keep on your way.
All right. All right. Well, for my number three, I kind of went to the opposite end of the dining spectrum. And number three on my list is Flying Fish Cafe. You know, it's a signature restaurant. It's a 2-table service credit meal if you're on the dining plan. But I really think it can be a great experience, especially I think it's a nice restaurant that can be a good introduction to sort of finer dining for kids. It's a little more inviting. It's not quite so stuffy as a lot of the signature restaurants. And so I think that's one of the things that is in its favor. Another thing that I really like about Flying Fish Cafe, and I haven't had the opportunity to try it out myself just yet, but I've heard great things, and I'm looking forward to trying it next time we're down, is they now have a chef's counter. It's an idea that they actually borrowed from one of the restaurants in Disneyland. Basically, they were, you know, stumbled on it by accident. I mean, basically, they had a chunk of the bar that happens to look over the open kitchen, and they noticed that people liked to eat at that little chunk of the bar because they could kind of chat with the chefs, and, you know, every once in a while the chefs would, you know, share something they were working on in there. And they've now kind of made that into a special event, you know, spot to dine. And it's a little bit like a, you know, chef's table light, but you get that direct interaction with the chefs. You get to learn a little bit more about the food and get kind of an interactive experience with the cast members there that are running the kitchen. So quality food, fine dining experience, but I think an accessible fine dining experience. Flying Fish Cafe is number 3 on my list.
Now, Aaron, quick question about Flying Fish.
Sure.
With that being signature dining, I've never eaten there. Does that have an age limit for kids?
No. The only restaurant on property that has an actual age limit is Victoria and Albert's. The okay, signature dining restaurants, yeah, I mean, a lot of people are reluctant to bring their kids to signature restaurants. I think that it's a good way to introduce kids to fine dining and to something different. And if you're nervous about spending the money on that kind of thing for kids, I don't blame you. But remember that, particularly if you're not on the dining plan, it doesn't have to be such a big deal. You know, even though it's a fine dining restaurant, they're happy to split meals for people. So, you know, you can get, you get something you want, your wife gets something she wants, and then you each share some of what you've got with the kids, you know. It's still not cheap. It's fine dining, but the kids get to, you know, taste some higher end foods and things that they can learn to kind of develop a palate a little bit. There's always something on the menu for kids. They've got kids menus. And so there's kind of a fallback that you can always go to. I think, like I said, it's a good way to introduce kids by taking advantage of the fact that, you know, you're in a fine dining place that doesn't really mind and is used to splitting plates and sharing food.
It's good to know.
Out of fear that we're going to steal all of Scott's choices, we're going to bounce back to Scott for number 2.
Well, me and Jason kind of have opposite sides of my number 2.
Okay.
My number 2 is Cape May Cafe for dinner.
It was my number 2 also.
That is my... I've only ever eaten there at dinner. I've heard good things about it all the way around, but it's just great food. It's a great resort to eat at. What else can I say, I guess? I know me and Jason talked earlier, and it was on his top 5 list for the breakfast, so I'll kind of let him take over and
talk
about his breakfast experience also.
Yeah, so Jason, is Cape May number 2 on your list for the breakfast?
Actually, Cape May all around was my number 1.
Oh, okay.
And like Scott had said, when he and his wife and my wife and I had taken an adult trip down there, we went to the clam bake that they offer each night. And the seafood buffet with the seafood pasta and mussels and clams and snow crab legs and things like that. And then they also had like a carving station for roast beef and things. And you know, it's your typical buffet line, Disney style. But the food was really, really good. And then I've also taken my girls there, and we did the breakfast with character dining there with Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy in their beach attire. And, you know, still, it's a buffet. And, yeah, I guess I would say that it's a lot of money for scrambled eggs if you're going as adults. You know, that might not be the best option, you know, of course. I mean, the food is good. They have quiche and, you know, cold cereals and oatmeal and grits and all kinds of good stuff. But as far as the morning when we went and the efficiency that of which you can get through there, the characters, you know, a lot of those character meals, when they come around table to table, sometimes it gets a little crowded or it kind of becomes an inefficient thing. But at the Cape May, there's a lot of room, and they get through there quickly, and they don't seem rushed. And like I said, the food is really good.
Yeah, you know, I think that one of the things about that Cape May character breakfast is that, first of all, it's not cheap. No character meal is, but as character meals go, it's less expensive than most of the alternatives. And in particular, it's probably close to half of what it costs to eat at Chef Mickey's for breakfast. And you get almost the same characters. As a matter of fact, it's one of the few places where you see Minnie Mouse. So I think it's a very much overlooked character breakfast. But I have to agree with you for dinner. It's just tremendous. You know, I went there with some friends on an adults-only trip, and we referred to our dinner there as crustacean devastation. I think they had to... shortly after that, after we ate there, they had to close down for the renovation, and we like to think we had something to do with that. Yeah, you know, how can you not love a place that features a vat of melted butter? It's really well done seafood buffet, and it's easy to screw up a seafood buffet, but it's a busy enough restaurant that everything stays fresh. They do a really good job of rotating food and making sure that everything up there is up there fresh. I have never eaten at a seafood buffet where you could eat, you know, snow crab legs off the buffet and not have them be kind of soggy, you know, how they get on most seafood buffets. There, they keep them fresh. They keep them hot without drying them out or you know, drowning them in boiling water so they end up overcooked. Can't complain at all, and looking forward to getting out there again. Okay, so, oh, Jason's number two, I think, is still floating out there.
Yep. My number two, and I kind of talked to Scott about this a little bit, was the Boardwalk To Go, the kiosks there on the boardwalk. It's great for kids. They do have a, kind of a limited selection of foods, and a lot of it is carnival food, but they have, you know, corn dogs and hot wings and things like that. But what I think really, really sets that apart is the whole atmosphere of the boardwalk, especially at night. You know, it's easy to get some of that Disney magic sprinkled on you when you're out there and you're having a thing of nachos with your kids and they're shooting basketball hoops, or you're watching the street performers, or, you know, they're watching the magic act or things like that. And it's, you know, a nice evening out there. And that's the reason I gave it my number two. I mean, sure, you know, I can get hot dogs at home and you know, things like that. But the act of boardwalk, that this really sets it up, and I think it is kind of a hidden jewel there.
Excellent. That's a good point. It's a good point. I think a lot of those little places like that get overlooked when, you know, you're spending your time focusing on places like, you know, Flying Fish and Cape May. And you know, they do provide a important piece, I think, of sort of that boardwalk experience that is kind of integral to that Epcot resort area. All right. Well, so I guess I've got the only other number one left on my list. And my number one is Yachtsman Steakhouse. We just had a terrific meal there. Was thrilled with the service. I will say it took them seating there took longer than I expected it to. They were way behind for whatever reason the night we ate there. And I think we got seated, you know, close to 15 minutes late, and we checked in 15 minutes early. So we were sitting around there for half an hour waiting to be seated. And the kids were pretty antsy by that time. But I got to give them credit because, you know, the quality of the service that we got when we got in there, as a result of that, you know, the kids weren't too fidgety to behave. We were able to enjoy our dinner. Dinner itself was great. You know, I took advantage of the fact that, okay, so if all the steaks are going to be $42 or so above, why not splurge a little bit, spend $55 on the porterhouse, and then I was able to split that with my daughter, and that gives you, you know, you're our meat man on the podcast, Jason. You know, porterhouse basically is two steaks for the price of one, right?
Absolutely.
So we got to do that. And I, again, I got to give them credit because the porterhouse is really two cuts of steak together. A lot of places you order a porterhouse and they screw up one or the other. You know, the filet side is great and the strip side is raw, or, you know, the strip side is perfect, but the filet is overcooked. Both sides are perfect. Really enjoyed that. And one of the highlights of that meal for me was their lobster bisque. I just thought it was tremendous. One of the best lobster bisques I've had anywhere. they put a foam on the top of it that added a nice little touch. It was really good. So, Scott, you said you had an honorable mention you wanted to make sure you got a chance to talk about.
Yeah, not I don't need to talk a lot about it, but since we're talking about boardwalk food, late night snacks, you cannot pass up the popcorn at Jelly Rolls.
Hell yeah.
Okay. Well, now, what's so special about popcorn at Jelly Rolls?
Well, it's just popcorn, but it's Jelly Rolls popcorn. You know, the Wordist ads, the beer at Jelly Rolls, the, what did you say, Jason, ambiance of Jelly Rolls, and then there's popcorn. I got to mention it since we're talking about food at Boardwalk.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, you know, as long as we're talking honorable mentions, I did want to mention one other restaurant that's in the area that I think gets overlooked a lot, and that's Cucina, which is sort of a Greek Mediterranean-themed restaurant. It's run by Kat Cora, who's one of the original American version Iron Chefs. Wanted to mention it because I think there's a tendency for Disney World restaurants to develop rather generic menus. And Cucina deserves a lot of credit for maintaining its uniqueness. And, you know, if you're looking for someplace, especially you're on a longer trip and you want to get something that's a little different that, you know, isn't going to be on the menu of every other restaurant that you happen to eat in, check out Cucina. Some really nice Mediterranean style dishes with a good twist from, you know, the mind of a top flight chef. So, I haven't eaten there enough, to really, you know, have it work its way into my top five list. It might get there eventually, but, I think it's close. And, if, like I said, if nothing else, it gets credit for the effort it's making.
Now, where's that at, Aaron?
Yeah, Cucina's over there at Boardwalk, over kind of next to where Flying Fish is. So you've heard from us what we think the top restaurants in the Epcot Resort area are. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, and participate in the discussions in our forums at boards.dizdads.com. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with Jason Mitz.
Eat more bacon, fellas.
And Scott Henney.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Brought to you by Fairy Tale Journeys, an authorized Disney travel planner. Let us help you put together your next magical Disney vacation. Find us at fairytalejourneys.com. Let us sweat the details so you don't have to.